I am a good person, and sometimes good people don't get no respect. Rodney Dangerfield.
Hey, I don't get no respect. No respect at all. When I was in the sandbox as a kid, I got no respect. Ah, you know what don't get no respect? Airplane food. Why don't they just make the plane out of the airline food? My wife don't get no respect. Some take her, please, for example. If you don't get no respect, you might be a redneck.
Respect is nice.
What's the deal with grape nuts? No grapes, no nuts. I don't get no respect.
TBTL.
Woo-woo. This is the 4 o'clock to Negative Town. All aboard.
Listen up, ladies. I get it. It is very hard not to get seduced by these two. And yeah, I'm going to say it. These two, super good looking, super hot guys.
My mom told me if I wait for things, like, good things will happen to me, dude. And I waited for some things and I got some banana bread at work today, dude. Hell yeah.
Oh, won't somebody please think of the children?
Well, hello there, and good morning, everybody. Welcome to a Wednesday edition of TBTL, the show that just might be too beautiful to live.
I'm so excited about this show. It is weird. It is beautiful. It has a plot that goes in fascinating directions.
My name is Luke Burbank. I am your host.
Oh, hey, y'all said my name.
Coming to you from the Burbank Springs Broadcast Center, perched atop Alabama Hill in Bellingham, Washington, the Bay City. Foggy, misty day here. Looking over Lake Whatcom from Alabama Hill. And we've got a great show in store for you. It is episode 2796 in a collector series.
Let the fun begin.
Well, did something last night that I don't know if I feel great about.
I wish I hadn't done that.
Watched another documentary on Netflix about kind of like the food that we eat and where it comes from and what it does to our body. And now,
welcome to Food News Today.
Well, I got a whole new situation. I'm trying, as of this morning, let me just put it this way. Watching this documentary last night had me at the co-op at 7:05 a.m. today, buying vegan cheese and non-dairy creamer for my coffee. So,
this song goes out to all the coffee lovers of the world.
Get a full update on that coming up, as if you haven't heard enough about my various dietary decisions and all of that. But, hey, I don't know. We do the show 5 days a week, people. So we got to talk about something, and that's the something we might talk about today. Oh, and also, dance litigation. Fortnite is being sued. The video game, actually the people who created it, the company, are being sued by Alfonso Ribeiro from Fresh Prince of Bel-Air for stealing the Carlton. Somebody called Backpack Kid, who invented the floss dance. I didn't know the floss dance was invented, apparently, by this, like, mildly awkward kid who does these dance videos, Backpack Kid. I'm sure many of you, and particularly the younger members of our listening audience, already knew about this. This was news to me. And then something called the Millie Rock by a guy named 2 Millie, who I honestly, of the three lawsuits, I think Millie Rocks is the absolute flimsiest. But we'll talk about that. And what else are we going to do? Emails, V-mails. If we want to stay on the entertainment tip, we can talk about Mortal Engines. That movie is on track to lose $100 million this week. And then Bohemian Rhapsody is apparently the highest grossing music biopic ever, even though Andrew and I panned it. Based on watching the trailer, which is how we do most of our film research, is just watching the trailer. Speaking of Andrew, the longest-running Cobro of the show, known for his drawings of tall ships, their grace and their splendor, he is a handsome young stranger. He never misses a sausage fest. He can only hear Yanni, but he brings a special something to the show.
It's a kind of magic.
It really is. He's Andrew Walsh, and he joins us right now from the Roosevelt neighborhood of Seattle, Washington. Good morning, my friend.
Good morning. I have a question for you, and it's going to sound aggressive or passive-aggressive, and I don't mean it that way. I don't want to start the show like that. It's an honest question. On a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being the proudest, 0 being the least proud, how proud are you of your Dance Dance litigation joke?
I'd give it a 5.
Really? I think you should be more proud of it than that. I think it's a good joke.
Oh.
But also, like, you really let it...
Not shame?
You really
what
paused.
Am I feeling right now?
You really paused. Less? And I was like, this is a man who's proud of that joke. Not that you shouldn't be. Not that there's anything wrong with that. But I was just... No. I wasn't sure if you kind of woke up and you're like... I almost thought, like, maybe it's one of those stories where, like, I could do this story. I don't have to do this story. But I have this Dance Dance litigation line, and I think I think it makes the cut now.
Thank you. No, you know what's so sad? That part of the show sheet is in a much smaller font, so I had to squint.
I see. I see.
That's the pause was so much more based on that than me wanting to really tee it up. But, of course, but the first thing I wanted to call it was Dance Dance Resolution, a nod to the dance troupe on The Good Place.
Oh, right. I was like, I know that, right. Well, if they settle out of court, then you can call it a Dance Dance Resolution. So hopefully this story will be coming back.
So I walked around a little bit this morning trying to think of something Dance Dance and then something kind of legalese, but that sounded like revolution. And then, I landed on litigation. Mostly I just was, I mean, I guess we're almost just doing the top story now and we don't have to, but yeah, it's more the story of the people suing Fortnite that was kind of interesting to me.
I actually think it's an interesting story. I don't know. Okay. I've been seeing the headlines and kind of tweets about it. It's one of those stories that I kind of know from around the edges, from the periphery, sort of. So I'm interested in hearing the details, which you'll lay out for me. I'm gonna give you a preview here, a Ford promo of my hot take. Again, here's my hot take on a story that I haven't read. So that's my patented move. You just can't sue over dances. Okay, more on that soon.
Ah, I like it. Spicy forward promotion.
Yeah.
Here on the show. I talked about this in the intro to the show, how I found myself at the co-op this morning early on. So I watched this movie, I watched this documentary Forks Over Knives last night. You must have heard reference to this, right?
Fork Knives, yes. Aren't they suing over dances? Sorry, that was not as good as your litigation joke.
Fork Knives are suing Fortnite copyright infringement.
No, I haven't heard of this.
Oh, really? It's kind of one of those standard, it's like Fast Food Nation. It's like the book Fast Food Nation. I feel like it's one of those sort of seminal movies that people see and then they have a really dramatic reaction to. And I hadn't watched it, and I think I was expecting a certain style of, like, most of the new documentaries, the newer documentaries that are out, they're really cleverly put together. You know, like, they're like the graphics that they'll use or the reenactments or the animations, like, I'm not really part of this world. The makers of documentaries have gotten really clever with what they do now. And that's fun to watch. Then it's interesting when you watch something that was made, I'm going to guess this Forks Over Knives was made 10 years ago, and they have, like, none of that advantage. Like, the graphics are comically bad, and it's – I don't know. I don't even know if this thing was paid for by these two doctors that are profiled, and I don't understand much of the backstory. But what I do know is everybody who sees Forks Over Knives – and, in fact, when I've told people, oh, yeah, I'm trying to eat, you know, a little bit less meat, they go, oh, did you see Forks Over Knives? And it's not really as much a movie about the sort of animal industrial complex. It's a movie about – it's a documentary just about the evidence of what eating all the processed foods that we eat is really doing to our body and all the animal fat, just animal products, all that stuff. I don't think it's a huge, like, mind blower to people that's not the greatest for us. But just like a lot of the stuff that we've taken as a given about, like, protein and about calcium and stuff is just probably not – really helping us anymore. So I'll spare everyone the spiel. If you want to watch it, if you'd like to see a documentary from 2004 or something, go see Forks Over Knives. But the thing that bugged me, because I've been not eating a lot of meat, and it's been really easy for me actually. But I've been just in love with the dairy. I love cheese so much, and I've loved it even more now that I'm not that I'm not having all the other kind of meat and stuff that I have. So, like, a big thing for me, have you, do you see those in the cheese section of the store, Andrew? Those, like, I know you're not a big cheese person, but maybe you've just observed these or seen them at a party. There's this kind of thing that's popular now. It's just a bunch of slices of cheese, and it's kind of sealed under a plastic thing. But it'll be, like, five slices of cheddar, five slices of – and they're, like, the perfect size to put on a cracker and eat.
I'm in love with the cocoa. When you said you're in love with the milk, I thought of that. No, I have no idea what you're talking about. You mean, so it's okay, kind of, well, you're like the, cheese, you're on kind the, of, cheese on the go, you mean, if you want to kind of have a nice little cracker
now,
and cheese?
You know what it is? It's just they've just sliced the cheese for you, and then they've put a few different kinds together. It's just a relatively new packaging innovation that instead of buying a block of cheese or buying some sliced cheese that's just of one variety, pepper jack, cheddar,
okay,
what have you,
yeah,
this is just kind of a combo platter, but it's relatively affordable. It's not a huge amount. It's just enough that if you're having people over and you wanted to have cheese and crackers, you could just open it and put it out. Or if you're me and you were recently in New York, you could eat one each night by yourself as your dinner with crackers. I got in this. I had that trip to New York was crazy. I did not eat out one time. I was in New York for like 4 days. I would go work all day, and then I would stop at the same bougie grocery store where I tried to buy wine one time, and it was like this bizarre New York City, like you can only buy real alcohol at like liquor stores, and this wine was like fake wine or something. I don't know if it had
somebody
no alcohol
wrote an amazing song for us about your wine experience.
Yes.
Remember that?
So that same grocery store, which remains next to my hotel in New York, I would go in there. I'd buy one of these things of like cheese. I would buy I had a box of like whole wheat crackers, and I would sit there and I would watch like probably football related content and just eat through this whole thing of cheese, except the layer of the strata of cheese that was Swiss, because I don't really like Swiss cheese that much. I did that three nights in a row for my dinner in New York. I'll tell you, I kept costs down. I was averaging $7 a meal in Manhattan, which is really hard to do.
Well, also, but if you're just eating – if you're eating three dinners of mostly cheese three nights in a row, do you circle your calendar for the date in 2019 when you go to the bathroom again?
Oddly enough, and not to be gross, but my system – My system is unaffected by these things. Mm. And maybe I've trained it because I eat so much cheese.
Okay.
But anyway, I have – part of why it's not been a big deal for me to stop eating so much meat is because I still eat massive amounts of cheese. It's like almost my go-to in every meal now. And I'd use lots of half and half in my coffee because I drink like 8 cups of coffee a day. So it was particularly bummerific for me to watch this documentary, which I find to be believable and very compelling. And that for them to say, oh, yeah, also the dairy stuff. That's really like that. I'm not trying to make a medical claim here. I'm just saying what I saw in this movie. It's just that let me put it this way. They said something that really got to me, which was, And this is with peace and love to our listeners. I know we have at least one dairy farmer that is in our listening audience, and I don't think I'm going to make a dent in your overall sales. And you know what? You might want to get out of dairy farming anyway, William. It's a long day. Mm. There are no days off. What I've learned from talking to listener William in Maryland is it's really a tough racket being a dairy farmer. Maybe this is your sign to get out. Anyway, somebody says on this – one of these doctors says, oh, yeah, cow's milk is the perfect food if you're a baby cow.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's really well designed for that purpose, and it's less well designed for us humans. Like, we're one of the only species, maybe the only species, that's like, hey cow, get over here, other species.
Yeah, right.
Now I'm preaching to the choir, aren't I? Because I'm talking to a long-running anti-milk, anti-creamy, anti-cheesy person. So look, we're bonding over this.
Hey, Mr. Cow, do you have any goat friends? Because I'd like to see what their lactate tastes like as well.
I've said on this show that I understood intellectually that it's a bit of a weird thing to do. But I just, like I said, I don't drink a lot of milk just by itself in the glass, but I do consume tons and tons of cheese, and I consume a lot of half and half throughout the day. And let me just put it this way, without making any medical claims I can't personally back up. Their point is that dairy products turn on some stuff in our body particularly cancers, that are just not great, as opposed to the awesome cancers that you want to get.
Right.
And so, and they just have, I mean, the data is really compelling. And I'm watching it and I'm like, I don't want to see this right now. I've already, like, I don't drink anymore. I'm not eating meat. Like, can't I just have my goddamn cheese? And I mean, the answer is yes, I can. But I knew as I was watching it, I was like, here comes the next wave of something I'm going to try to do differently. And so I went to the co-op this morning and I bought some half and half-ish thing that's basically coconut milk and almond milk. And I'm going to tell you, Andrew, it's pretty good. It's actually very, it's quite delicious. What I need to get to eventually is just drinking black coffee. And I'm sure someone's going to say, yeah, coffee's not good for you either. I know. I'm trying to just like go step by step here. I can't give up every single thing. But it was also interesting because I was in the co-op and I bought a box of those, like, you know, the, what are they called? They're not satsumas. There's like the mandarin, those little oranges that are very popular this time of year.
Yeah, they're not satsumas. Kind of what's a satsuma?
Maybe they are.
I think they are. I get those mini oranges confused, but I know what you're talking about.
Okay, so I get a box of those, and the guy who's checking me out, super nice, he goes, I love these. He goes, I need to get some of them. And I'm buying, like, Carrie's in Seattle right now for work. I'm buying a box that could feed, like, 30 people. That's just the box size they sell them in. And I was like, yeah, there's no way I'm getting through all of these before they start to go bad. So I was like, hey, do you want one? Mm-hmm. Which I thought, like, that was kind of a weird – I'm just offering the guy food I'm buying
that
works there. I know, and I kind of thought, like, oh, I must be, like, he must be thinking, like, wow, this is a really friendly guy. And he goes, yeah, you know, goes, I will have one. He goes, I don't usually, when people offer me food, I don't usually take it. And I'm thinking, how often are people offering you food? I thought I was Mr. Magnanimous here.
Yeah.
And, like, one of my favorite characters from Watchmen, by the way, yeah, Mr. Magnanimous.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when he goes to the fiery planet, that's...
I felt sad for him when he was out on the fiery planet. Yeah. I really did. But, I was checking out his cartoon junk as well. But no, I was like, he was like, usually I don't take food. I just was, that stopped me. And I didn't actually say anything, but I thought to myself, are we as a society, are we offering that much food to the people checking us out of stores and co-ops?
Now my question now is, have I been an asshole for not offering food to the person checking me out?
I know.
Now I'm thinking of every single time I've been to the grocery store and not offered somebody food every time.
Have we? Is this a whole sort of version of tipping that we have been unaware
right,
of?
Right, right.
That every time I like leave the store, the person's just like,
God, great. What a creep. Don't choose my line.
One slice of Swiss cheese from his... So I guess I know the listeners, many of them anyway, are bored of my constant attempts at self-improvement. And it's hard because it's like I just want to talk about what's on the tip of my brain. And right now, all of this stuff is very much on the tip of my brain. But I also bought a bunch of – what I did was I bought a variety of different things. I bought some different kinds of vegan cheese. And I'm just going to try – I am not making any big rules for myself. But what I'm going to do – like this half and half thing that I'm having right now – is pretty good. Like, I could put this in my coffee and be perfectly happy. So I kind of think, well, I'm going to try to start doing that and then use less and less of it and then eventually not put it in my coffee at all. And, I mean, the great irony is I'm also putting Splenda in my coffee, which is, like, I'm sure 1,000 times worse than any dairy product I'm consuming because it is very not, you know, naturally occurring. What I'm trying to do is just not do anything too extreme, but just try stuff. And if it works, great. If it doesn't work, I can go back to what I wanted. You know, I'm not declaring I'm not going to eat cheese or meat, but I'm trying to do a little less of everything. And I guess we'll see how this goes. But I bought like $30 worth of fake milk and fake cheese at 7:05 in the morning and satsumas. And I was just like, I wonder if this guy is like, what's going on with this dude? Did he just find out he has a dairy allergy? Because I was like, I'm just going to do like a Pepsi challenge with all of this stuff and just see what kind of is the best.
He probably looked down and was just like, looks like somebody's wife is out of town. I know I'm biased about the milk thing because of my own, you know, weird feelings. I mean, I do drink milk, but I guess only with cereal. I guess if you're having cereal with milk in it, are you eating the milk or drinking the milk?
Boy, I think you – geez.
Wow.
You
really, God.
You have posed a real question. I think – you know why? Why it's a real question or why the answer is interesting? Because you both eat it and drink it.
Yes.
Right? I feel like you're – when you're getting a spoonful with the cereal, you're eating it. But when the cereal's gone and you're drinking it, you're obviously drinking it.
Well, can God make a bowl of cereal that is so milky even he can't eat it?
Gotta go. We're gonna have to come back with that LL Cool J song after the break. Milky cereal.
I only know that because of you. I think. What I was gonna say was that's basically the only form in which I consume just straight up milk these days. And a while back, probably more than a couple of years ago now, and I talked about it on the show. I got some almond milk, and Genevieve is a huge milk drinker. I don't know if you know that. A lot of people, I don't know that a lot of people her age, you know, her entire right. life, she'll just slug down milk. We keep skim milk in the fridge all the time, and she just drinks it constantly with meals, without meals. And I'm not so into it. And I tried this almond milk, I liked it so much more. Now, it did have a slightly different taste. It was a little sweet because I think they put something in it to. Like some sort of mm-hmm. slight vanilla flavoring or something. I tried to get an unflavored one. Anyway, but for me, I really enjoyed it because I was – there must be something with me that in the back of my head I am thinking about what I'm drinking when it comes to milk products. And so me just thinking, oh, yeah, people just squeezed all the milk out of these almonds.
That's exactly the process in my mind. That's what I assume. Yes. There's a huge – like the giant like vice –
yeah,
you know, or like a huge press, and then there's a guy, he just puts almonds in there, and then they just squeeze it down, and yep. then the milk comes out.
In my head, it's actually a bunch of tiny, tiny little workers. So to them, the almonds are almonds are actually the size of like tree trunks, and they each take a side of it, and they put it in the machine, and they crank it. Anyway, I'm not a scientist. Point being, for me, but again, it's not fair for me to say, but for me, moving to, you know, from regular milk to almond milk would not be a problem at all. I mean, I think if you told me right now I could never have any dairy product again. Oh, well, pizza. I'd have to cut pizza out of my life, and that would really suck. But aside from that, I think I'd be mostly okay.
Yeah, it just – I know we need to go to a break now. But I just – the thing for me is I need – I'm very binary with things, and I tend to – really, really kind of whipsaw from one way of living to another. Although this most recent kind of transition for me feels a little more sustainable because, well, first of all, I just don't feel like I'm forcing myself to do anything. Like I'm not saying this to brag or anything, but like I got up at 5:15 this morning because that's just when I woke up, which was totally like, I was just like, okay, well, I guess I'm getting up now. And then, like, I went to the gym because, I got these new Paul George basketball shoes that I'm – like, I'm so excited about these basketball shoes that I want to go play basketball because I have these basketball shoes. Mm-hmm. But I just was doing all these things that would represent, like, really healthy behavior for me in the past. But healthy behavior that I was just really forcing myself into. And what's been very strange for me is to just be like, oh, this actually feels pretty natural to me right now. Now, that could change. But I guess my point is I feel like things are sort of sustainable as far as making some better decisions. I don't feel like I'm not driving around being like, God, I wish I could go to McDonald's right now. I mean, occasionally I'll have that thought, but that's not generally the thought. That being said, I need to be careful that I don't just like go so ham on not eating ham mm-hmm. and everything else that I then end up at some point just being like, F it. And it just like, you know, the pendulum just swings back over to a bunch of decisions that are not great for you. I guess my point is it's like pulling on a thread, though. Like I watched this documentary last night, and like I feel pretty proud of myself that I've been like kind of swerving on meat. And now what I'm realizing is – so last night I get on my way home from Seattle and doing this TV interview with the guy who founded Snopes.com, which is now based in Tacoma, Washington.
Oh, I didn't know it was based in Tacoma.
His wife is – he was remarried. And his wife is from Tacoma, and so they live in Tacoma now. And anyway, so I was driving home, and I was kind of doing one of those things in my head where, like, what am I going to get for dinner? The devil on my shoulder was like, go get a Impossible Burger from the filling station and, like, two orders of fries. Because I was so hungry, and I was like, that just sounds so good. But then I was like, I'm going to just like horf that food down. And even though there's not any meat in that burger, it's still a burger. And I'm going to get double American cheese on it. And I know what's going to happen. I'm going to be lying there on the couch and I'm going to be like, oh, that was too much food. So I was like, I could also get my spicy eggplant thing from the Thai food place. And I'm like, that's mostly vegetables. That's just Avis reminding. That's Avis reminding me that I'm a wizard and I need to get a card.
Well, was that your phone buzzing? I thought it was a digital distortion down the line.
No, that is an alert on my calendar. I did not ask Avis to remind me that tomorrow afternoon I need to get a rental car in Portland. Thank you though for that, Avis. We appreciate it. Anyway, I'm driving home and I make what is probably the better decision. I'm going to go get Thai food, vegetarian Thai food. And because I'll be eating a lot of veggies and I get the brown rice now. And I eat that and I watch my Chris Hayes television program and I'm feeling pretty good.
Oh, he's on TV.
And then I start watching
now.
This for
the podcaster.
Yeah. I know him.
So he turned his podcast into a TV show?
That's a thing you can do now, I guess.
Wow.
I don't know. Nice. Fortnite and the like. I don't understand this world. Anyway, I make the good decision about getting the relatively healthy food. Vegetables and rice is what I'm eating. And I sit there and I eat it and I'm like, you know, kind of proud of myself, whatever. And then I watch this movie and what I realize is, what I should really be doing, like all that stuff is cooked in a ton of oil and they break down what all the oil is doing to all of our hearts and these cells that line our arteries, et cetera. And then I'm just like, where does it end? Like, am I just going to be, I guess I just have to eat, like, I can't even eat veggies someone else made. And then that feels restrictive to me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's why I say it feels like pulling on a thread, because on the one hand, I want to try to be healthy and I want to keep this rig going as long as I can, my body. And another reason that my current state of things feels a little more sustainable is I'm way less obsessed with what I weigh specifically. I'm just trying to put things in my body that are maybe a little better for it and just shake a leg most days. I feel like if I do that, cool. And then whatever happens, that's just what happens as a 42-year-old man. But it also just feels like, man, I ate veggies. I made a good decision, and now I'm sitting here like feeling like I made the wrong decision because it's all cooked in oil. And what I really should have done was just bought a bunch of fresh veggies, cut them up, and then just eaten them by themselves with like no salt on them. That's what I should be doing if I want to regenerate my body from the inside. Mm. But that feels doesn't feel like a way I can live the rest of my life.
I'm going to say something to you that a very annoying man who is heavily into AA used to say around me, and I hated
cool.
it. Don't
good. Well, this is the perfect place to pass that gem of wisdom on.
Don't should on yourself, Luke. Have I laid that on you before?
I think you have, but I find it hard to believe I haven't.
Yeah, you know, should do this. I remember saying, mm-hmm. I can't give away who the person I'm talking about is, but I remember saying, this is years and years and years ago, I'm saying, I should do this, I should do that. And then all of a sudden he just kind of pipes up and says, don't should on yourself, Andrew. Don't say should so much. And I was just like, oh my God, get out of my life.
All right, let's take a break. We are long overdue for it, and then when we come back, we'll do top stories and all of it. Oh, hey, by the way, well, after the break, I'll tell you something about the cat. Yesterday, we were trying to watch, see if a raccoon was breaking in to eat the cat's food.
And there is something about the soul of a cat.
And we saw and then Rich, my neighbor who is real, came over. I'm going to tell you something about that, Andrew, that I found out yesterday after I left your house after doing the show. That'll be after the break here on TBTL.
Also, I got screamed at a taco joint yesterday. I can tell you about that.
What?
Yeah, I cancel
the break. Wall-to-wall coverage. That's it. Serious.
TBTL breaking news.
Sorry, Everlane. Sorry, Broadcast Coffee. Sorry, Quip.
No, sorry, Luke, because I actually put a break right before you hit that breaking news sounder.
Oh, okay, good. Well, we're back, everybody.
We're back.
hey, nice to be back with all of you.
I know what future Andrew did. I may be making too big of a deal out of it, but I was. Well, I don't know. I don't know if this is a conversation or not. It's definitely not the feel good story of the morning. But yeah, I was. As you know, I had to swing by Cairo last night. I was on the Northwest Nerd podcast for their Festivus episode, which I don't know when that's going to be out, but probably soon, since it's, you know, holiday related. So keep an eye out for that. Our friends Nick and Dyer over there is tons of fun. But anyway, so I was heading over there to start recording at 7. So I swung through the university district and stopped at Chipotle. I like the fact that a moment ago I referred to it as a taco joint, by the way. I don't think Chipotle is really a taco joint.
But you know what's
I couldn't think of
funny?
It in the moment.
It's like It is. I mean, they do sell tacos, but if you say taco joint to 100% of Americans, mm-hmm. they will not think Chipotle.
Yeah.
And even if you said burrito joint, Chipotle is, it is an entity unto itself. And even though they make, it's, I guess you, what is that? Sui generis. Like, it is a burrito joint. It is a taco joint. But you would never think of it as those things.
As a matter of fact, there's somebody I'm thinking of right now who loves to talk about burritos and how she can't get any good burritos anywhere in the city, whatever. It just occurred to me I would love to have a conversation with her where I start describing this great taco joint that I love and just describe Chipotle until she finally realizes I'm talking about Chipotle and then see if her head explodes.
Sui generis is how they're trying to say it.
What does that mean again? Genevieve uses it all the time. Universal?
It means, it's a Latin phrase that means of its own kind,
unique.
By itself or
not
unique.
Universal, yes, unique.
The opposite.
So, you know, I don't know if this is a good story or not, but I was there. The University District is a place where, well, obviously there's a university there.
Oh, the Taco
there.
District?
It's in the Taco. There's a little taco concern there. It's a little boutique. I really think you would love it. They're building a name for themselves.
Wow.
Anyway, Luke, maybe you can help me with this a little bit. The University District definitely gets gritty. Kind of around the edges. You have a main thoroughfare there called the Ave. University Ave is called the Ave. And, you know, you have a lot of kind of street kids that hang out there. There's definitely crime. When people are visiting, I know, you know, from Genevieve's work, if they're bringing in people from other universities or something, they have to, like, really consider which path they take sometimes in the University District because, you know, there's some
ugliness
there.
It's oddly ungentrifiable
for
a city that is gentrifying at a breathtaking pace where, you know, housing costs are unmanageable for most people. University Way, a.k.a. the Ave, it's also one of those weird streets where it's not University Avenue, it's University Way.
Oh, right.
They
yes.
call it the Ave.
Did I say University
totally
Ave
dumb.
A second ago? I meant University
Well, but
Way.
That would make more sense. I don't think you're – I mean you're on the side of logic with this. I don't know why it's that thing. But anyway, yeah, it is – what happens is everything on University Way eventually becomes – well, in the olden days, it eventually became boba tea. Mm-hmm, now it eventually becomes some kind of vape, as you said, concern.
Yeah, right.
Like,
or
like,
a pho
and no
place.
Business –
like
or a gargoyle store for some reason.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
There's a store that just sells gargoyles and has been there for – gargoyles are apparently recession-proof. But yeah, it is sketchy and it's just odd because it's right next to this huge major research university. It's in the midst of a neighborhood that is very expensive to buy a house. Like if you're trying to buy a house in Ravenna or something mm-hmm. or where you live, Roosevelt, it's not cheap. But you just – yeah, anyway, I've gone on too long about this. But it's just weird because when I grew up, the Ave was sketchy. And now nothing else in Seattle is sketchy. And the Ave remains sketchy.
So anyway, I'm not usually there after dark, but it's like 6 o'clock. It's not like late. I'm not nervous or anything. I park my car a few blocks away from Chipotle. And then I'm waiting in line. Chipotle's relatively empty. There's a kid in front of me. I don't really pay that much attention to him. He's like looks like a college kid. And he gets his whatever he gets. I get my burrito. And it's a big, empty restaurant. There are very few people in there. And there are plenty of places to sit. But I always like to sit in the booths, which are in the back. And I think there are four booths in the back. And, you know, this is like any Chipotle that anybody's ever been in. So you can probably picture the booths. They're not necessarily super close together. In fact, as booths in a fast food restaurant go, they offer actually quite a bit of privacy. Chipotle, believe it or not, despite its kind of cold-feeling interior with all the metal, it's not the worst place if you want to hunker down with a newspaper for a little bit in these booths. There's a reason I'm emphasizing that. So I'm looking towards the booths to go sit down with my food. And I have a choice. Out of the four of them, picture this. The one all the way to the left by the door, there is the kid who was in front of me, the college kid, and he just sat down with his food. Then there's an empty booth. And then there's another empty booth. And then on the other end, there's an older guy who is like just sitting there reading a book. I told you it's a great place to hang out. Looks like he's finished his food, but he's just camped there reading a book. So I'm going to now choose a booth that is either closer to the guy reading the book or closer to the kid who just sat down. It really makes no difference because you're not on top of each other in this restaurant. I go and I choose the booth that is closest to the kid who just sat down. I put my food down. I'm standing, I'm standing up just taking off my coat. All of a sudden, the kid, not looking at me, but right out loud, starts saying, "F and effer." And he is using a homophobic slur here. "F and effer,
what?
Has the whole restaurant. You got to sit next to me, you effer." I'm saying effer, but you know what I'm talking about. And then
yeah, but he's using the F word that we think of, and then he's also using the other F word.
The other F word, the terrible slur. Exactly. In other words, I'm sitting next to him because I'm an effer. And I hear this. I'm just like, oh, my gosh. And I remember my reaction. I'm still trying to figure out my reaction because I'm surprised by my reaction, which was almost a smile and be like, what I said was, I'm like, dude, I'll move. I'll move, man. I even said it kind of like that. I think kind of laughing. Like, I think I was just so surprised. And maybe it's just because, I mean, listen.
How many feet were between you and the homophobe?
Well, like three or something. I mean, he's just sitting in his booth. I'm not really like looming over him, but I'm just kind of standing in the booth next to him for a second, taking off my jacket.
You're not even in the same. Like, you guys have – you're in separate booths. I just want to make sure I'm understanding this.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that's why I was really describing these booths. They're not even like a Burger King booth where you're kind of like, if you're both sitting down, you're making eye contact with each other. They have little dividers. So once I sit down, I won't even be able to see him. And when I sit down, I'll be looking at the back of his head. Now, there was a moment. It's kind of funny.
I would have beat the shit out of this kid. I mean, honestly, I would have seriously been like, what?
Well, the thing is,
on so many levels.
Well, here's the thing, though. I mean, and this is maybe the point of the story, if there is even a point, is, I mean, clearly he probably was struggling with some mental illness. Like,
you're
walking down the Ave, or really anywhere in Seattle, because we have a lot of people who are living on the streets, people who are struggling with all kinds of, like, you know, drug addiction stuff, all kinds of mental illness stuff. And so I wouldn't say your head's on a swivel, but you're used to navigating through people who are having all kinds of episodes, or just, I always think of that Far Side cartoon, which showed four squares and it said nature's way of saying do not disturb, and it shows a bunch of kind of dangerous animals, right. And then some guy out of water but wearing I think water wings and an inner tube. Anyway, like you can sort of see red flags, you know, and you're just kind of like, okay, I'm gonna, you know, just be cautious as
but
I.
But like, did he look? But, I know you.
Well, yeah. Okay,
you were studying this kid. Okay.
Okay.
Sorry,
so I'm going to sit down, and he's not looking at me when he says this, and I kind of go. I'm like, oh man, I'll move. Like, I just like, I'll move because clearly something's wrong and I don't care. And I guess my brain was just like, this guy must be having an episode or something. But then he does. Then he stands up and he looks right at me and he, you know, says, F and F again. You got the whole restaurant. You got it next to me, you effer. And I'm just kind of like, dude, I'm just going to move. And then he just he picks up his bags and storms out the door. It was interesting. Oh, I never finished my thought, which was, it really was shocking to me because, you know, we shouldn't judge people from afar, I guess. But he didn't have any of the usual looks or telltale signs of somebody who's going through an episode or whatever. So which made it so much more shocking to me. And it was a very, I mean, as you would guess, unsettling thing. You know, Veeves and I.
That's how you ruin a taco.
I mean, actually,
you know, like, because now you're just going to sit down and eat your lunch or your dinner and just be like, oh, okay, now I'm rattled, right?
You know, oddly, that happened so fast. I wasn't as rattled as I might be. It didn't ruin my meal. I thought it was weird. I kind of turned to the guy who was reading his book. I was like, wow. And he's like, I didn't really hear it. And I'm like, oh, it was a weird encounter. He's like, oh, he didn't. Now I'm being the weird guy talking to the guy trying to read a book. And so then I sat down and I'd read the news and I ate my burrito. But walking back to my car was the most unnerved I have been in the city since, like, I was a kid.
You were probably relaxed in the burrito concern,
uh-huh,
because he had left. So you were like, okay, he's not here. I'm just doing my thing. But then when you started to walk to your car, you're like, is he waiting around a corner for me?
I did. I literally thought that when I left the restaurant, I actually did look over my shoulder, which is weird. And this gets into some things that I don't even know how to articulate. So this will be new ground for the show. But I think Veeves and I love living in the city. And I think we kind of pride ourselves as not being scaredy cats. I just think a lot of the people, especially like the background that we came up in, we both grew up in very, very suburban atmospheres. And so we can even get snooty about it. And I don't want to be snooty about it. But sometimes when we're talking amongst ourselves and we hear about, somebody who lives like way, way out in the safest suburbs in the world, but also has like a security system that, you know, would be able to keep El Chapo out of. And just like, you're just like, you need the security system less than anybody we know because of how you've situated your life. And it just sort of, and we can get a little snobby about people who seem to be driven by fear or people who just think, my right. God, who are scared to even park in the city to go see a movie, let alone us living in the city. Now, keep in mind, what are the stories I've told on the show recently? You know, our scooter was stolen, a package was stolen off a porch, and that was in even a nicer neighborhood than we live in. So, I mean, there are realities of living in a city, but even those, I sort of feel like Veeves and I, nothing really terrible has happened to us, and we roll with it. And I just don't like the feeling. I feel foolish feeling nervous in the university district, and it was just kind of a weird feeling walking to my car, being like, oh, now I feel like one of those people who I might hear on Cairo radio who's scared to come into Seattle. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah, because so much of the time it's a code for racism. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, maybe not the most overt or even most conscious, but it's like often it's like, oh, those big cities with all their, like those urban cities and all their danger. It's like, oh, you don't mean a white guy named Brody, usually, right. When you're thinking about that, you know, not to get into people's motivations or whatever, but it's like so much of the stuff around this sort of anti-city conversation, if you really get down to the core of it, a lot of it is not great, in my opinion. So to have even a moment of being like, oh, yeah, this is... You got to really kind of watch yourself when you're in the U district. It just starts to feel very much like someone calling into the Dory Monson show to proudly exclaim or declare that they haven't been in Seattle for 4 years because of one time when
somebody looked at them when they were trying to parallel park.
A person of color stood near their car, stood near their SUV while they were parking it. And like that really wigged him out. It's just like you don't want to be that. It's almost like if a good guy with a gun actually stops a bad guy with a gun, you're like, God damn it.
Like, really? Right. Well, and I do just want to clarify one thing, too, or add one thing, because I'm not saying that living in the city or just being in the city a lot doesn't mean that you shouldn't be wary. You know, I'm not saying that you should act exactly how you would look if you were just, you know, playing basketball outside your McMansion in Burgundy Bay East, you know, like kind of how I grew up. But everything except for the basketball. I didn't play basketball.
I never knew it was Burgundy Bay East. I don't know why I find it. I want to know. Now I want to know what's up with Burgundy Bay West.
Let me tell you this. It's very similar. you can get lost pretty easily in a very twilighty zone kind of way. I mean, there are certain things you do want to be wary and you do want to be careful. And of course, if you do look at the stats, I'm sure there are more like people kind of just generally assaulted in some way or another on the streets here in Seattle.
I will tell you this, though,
in the suburbs,
as a Dateline NBC watcher, the crimes out in suburban America are weirder.
Yeah, right. Like, and the motivations are
the
stranger.
Crimes in Burgundy Bay West are much more troubling than the crimes in the U District, because most of the crimes that happen in the big cities are things like somebody goes up and mugs someone on the street, which is, I'm not saying it's not traumatic for the person being mugged, but that's a crime that makes sense. You get into the suburbs, some ice storm American Beauty weird shit going on.
And New Hampshire as well, man. New Hampshire had, and the rural parts of New Hampshire too, had just the weirdest crimes. I remember we would cover, or my journalist friends were covering when I was working at the radio station there. But anyway, so that was, I don't have a power out for that story. It was just a very, it was a very odd feeling yesterday, just kind of, you know, being screamed at like that. And then kind of realizing what's going on, but then, and also like, it's just funny how, so I did leave, and I'm like, hey, this guy definitely, when he got up, he did look me in the face and you know, called me those things again and
stormed
out of there.
How
so big, part of me,
was he like physically, I don't know why this is important. Was he physically imposing and menacing? And wow. About how old was he?
This all happened so quickly. He wasn't an especially big guy. He was a kid. I couldn't even tell you what his face looked like right now. I cannot describe him at all. He was a young African-American kid who was like college-aged, you know? And at first glance did not seem to, I didn't get a good look, but he didn't seem like somebody who was living on the streets necessarily. He just had a kind of
student
vibe.
But you said he picked up his bags. Did he have like a bunch of bags?
No, I think he had a backpack, but I also had my backpack. I do not know if his was from Everlane. I don't think so. I would say that Everlane, though, probably avoid hiring him as a spokesperson for your products, but also you do you.
Yeah, sure. It's a non-traditional brand. I like it. They have radically transparent pricing and radically transparent spokespeople.
Right. Anyway, yeah, so I don't – but he was college-aged. That's kind of all I know. And
I guess – I mean, and by the way
– maybe my height, maybe a little bit shorter. I don't know about
– It's really sad that like my brain is like going, could you have won the fight? Like that's not how we should make these assessments. And then you did the right thing, which was to just be like, okay, whatever's going on with you is that's not your problem. Has nothing to do with you. I mean, you, Andrew Walsh. And of course you don't – like there's no upside to like physically confronting someone who says that kind of thing. And yet I would have – depending on the mood I was in, how much vegan cheese I'd consumed that morning, if somebody said that to me, I would be mad. I would be personally offended, and then I would be offended for gay people. I'd be offended for like – I would be so – I would feel righteous indignation, which by the way is not probably that righteous, but in my mind it would feel like righteous indignation. And somebody threatening me like that or just saying something aggressive to me if I'm in the wrong mood can bring out so much aggressiveness in me. Like I would have really – again, I could have also just been like, sorry, dude, and gone to the other side of the restaurant, or I could have just like started punching the guy. Like without further provocation, which would have been a bad look.
It's fun. Like this wasn't one of those moments where I can't explain it. We talked about that story where a neighbor confronted me after I left. We only talked about this once, very briefly on the show. So listeners probably don't remember it. But you know the time where a neighbor confronted me and Genevieve, I considered to be.
Dude, that's a wild story, though. I think that unlike my vegan meditations. That's a wild story that really deserves some airtime. So I think
we had told, you mean the one from back in the day.
Yeah, when your neighbor like came screaming at you over these pink inked notes, et cetera. Yes, like, no, that's a good, that's a classic.
Remembering the pink ink, by the way, because I thought that was an important part of the story. Anyway, when that guy comes rushing at me, that also is happening really fast. But yes, my emotions are more what you're talking about, which is just like, you know, the fight or flight thing, and I was ready to fight, and I was just like, you know, filled with adrenaline, and I was angry and surprised and everything, and I'm at my house. But like,
you live
this-
there, so now it's like you're defending your turf a little bit. Like your brain's making all these calculations of like, I live here, my girlfriend lives here, we have to come here every day. We can, like, you're making all these calculations about like fighting, flighting. And I know that's not how flighting is not a verb, but. Like this is the other thing is you're in a Chipotle. It has no impact on you. So it's so much more the logical thing to just be like, okay, I don't want to get into this.
But it's not even logical. I mean, you know, again, this whole exchange happened in the course of probably 20 seconds, right? If that. Mm-hmm. So it's not even a logical thing. It's just like, what is your body going to do? And I think it's just because we do have, unfortunately, so many people, like I said before, who are struggling. And so many times, I mean, there is a guy, actually, I haven't heard him in a while, but when Vives and I moved into this apartment here, and I love our neighborhood, but, you know, there are people who are struggling all over the place. And there was some guy who used to walk up and down Roosevelt Avenue here, Roosevelt Way. Now I'm all – what is my own address?
Sorry.
I'm not even joking. I'm calling everything
You're on Roosevelt Way.
Wow, that's weird. I'm calling everything Avenue. But anyway, you could hear him sometimes in the morning, sometimes late at night, and he has demons in his head, and he's – that's my medical diagnosis. And you could just hear him just screaming from the top of his lungs on the empty street from – blocks and blocks away, and it gets closer and closer. Then it gets very concerning, and you can imagine being in your home and just kind of hearing that, and not even like scared. I mean, he's not coming in, but like it's just like you're just you just. It's just such an upsetting sound, and you think about him and what's happening in his head, and then you hear him just keep going down the street, and that's like you can hear it coming and going for a good 3 or 4 minutes or something. And I think maybe I've just kind of gotten used to realizing or seeing somebody who needs their space. And so in this case, I think it was just me immediately being like, oh, I'll move. Like, there was no, like, I want this table, or you don't tell me what to do. If this had just been some, like, table of, like, good-looking jocks, let's just go for it, with their cheerleader girlfriends, and they looked at me and said, hey,
wait a
nerd.
Second, well, at that point, you know that you've stumbled into a 1980s movie,
right.
And there's more serious shit going on, like, because you're now time-traveling.
And they've kicked Chipotle dust in my face and said, get out of here,
only
wimp.
Rodney Dangerfield could teach you how to really party.
You know, I'm sure even if it was only a 20-second thing, but if it was just, like, people who just felt like it was some sort of a social thing or whatever, I would have been like, you know, I would have had a very different reaction. But it was more like I thought I was stepping over a stick and it ended up being a snake. And it just shocked me. And I said, I'll give you your space, which is a terrible way to talk about somebody who's probably got mental health issues. But it was definitely.
I think that's actually extremely thoughtful. My thought was to slug him.
Right.
So I think giving him I'll give you your space is actually a very. I mean, look, in this moment, I don't think you're the person to try to intervene in this person's life and try to presuming they have mental health issues, they might just have like rage issues, which
I guess
about the DSM. I mean, is that a mental health issue, or is it just guy just an asshole? I don't know.
I mean, that is a question. I mean, is there any world in which I mean you just can't act like that in society without something being, you know,
without
off
getting punched
or
by
unchecked
Luke at some
in your
point.
Brain. Yeah. So
were you bummed out though that your plan to have gay sex with him was thwarted when he figured out what you were doing?
When he was standing in front of me in line, he just seemed more open. And I guess I misread the situation.
Yeah. I mean, he was on to you from the moment you sat down one booth over from him.
There, I came here
in
to
this
do
taco
two things,
concern.
And I'm almost out of burrito. Hey, you got it. You got a copy of this song.
I have access to music, too. and I have access to gratitude for these fine people whose names I'm about to read because they are our donors of the day. They donate to TBTL. They make the show possible. They are Gail Floyd of Kirkwood, Missouri. I'm trying to think, did we go through Kirkwood, Missouri on our trip last summer? I don't know, but
doesn't ring a bell.
I would imagine it's a lovely place. I'd imagine it's a great place to hitchhike. Dorothy Pratt of Thomaston, Connecticut, Karen Hendricks of Seattle, Washington, Lori Hope of Everett, Washington, local Camaro Kev pronunciation, Everett, Washington, Cindy Pestka, not Pesca, Pestka, with an S-T-K-A of Seattle, Washington, and Chris Aquino of Portland, Oregon. Chris, Cindy, Lori, Karen, Dorothy, Gail, thank you, babies. We really appreciate your donations to the show. Thanks for helping us do this 5 days a week. Thanks for prioritizing this. I know that it's like lots and lots of things that we can give our hard-earned money to, and you guys are giving it to TBTL, at least some part of it, and we are here to thank you today. Thanks for making episode 2796 in a collector series possible.
Hello and welcome to Top Story.
The creators of Fortnite are being sued now by not only Alfonso Ribeiro from The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. And do you know that I don't think you would know this, Andrew, but he's the current host of whatever the latest incarnation of America's Funniest Home Videos are.
That wait, did he also he hosted the dancing? He did host a dancing show for a while too, right? Or was he just a guest on America's Stars Got Dancing?
I don't know. I don't follow his career closely enough, but I can tell you that I was like the whole America's Funniest Home Videos thing is mm-hmm. just fascinating to mm-hmm. me because it's still on
mm-hmm.
and it's still pretty funny.
Yeah. Like, I assume it's much more internet based though, right? It's probably more
yeah, which is better.
Point-o-y.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yes, but my you know minus the put downs, but I like. America's Funniest Home Videos is such an interesting phenomenon to me because I watched it when I was a kid. Our dream was to get on it, you know, as a family. This is when, you know, 1 in 10 households had a camcorder. But you would watch it. I mean, I could sing the song for you. I won't. But I know it's a Vin DeBona production. Like, I just – like, I've been watching it since I was a little kid. And then Carrie and I got into this weird groove with watching it again like a year or two mm-hmm. ago. And – it still holds up. And but here's the thing. Whether it was Bob Saget in the original days or Carlton from The Fresh Prince today, the hosting, I think Tom Bergeron hosted it for a while maybe, the hosting of it and the jokes are dreadful.
Mm.
Like the everything that's not a dad getting hit in the Miami meat tent with a baseball his kid just swung on, everything that's not that is unwatchably bad about America's Funniest Home Videos. I think it's now called AFV, America's Funniest Videos, because they don't just have to happen at home, Andrew.
No, that's true.
You know, 80% of funny home videos happen within 2 miles of the home.
I know. Isn't that a joke? Somebody says, like, you know, 90% of accidents happen at home. That's why I don't hang out at home. Isn't that like a Stephen Wright joke or something?
That sounds very possible. I just remember being when I was becoming driving age that. They were always trying to tell you that like most car accidents happen, you know, within a mile of your house. So therefore, you need to wear your seatbelt even if you're just driving down to the store to get almond milk. I remember that actually stuck with me. And so I will, because somehow in my mind it was like, oh, I'm just driving a mile. I don't need a seatbelt. And it's like, that doesn't make any sense logically. And I would hear that in my head. And then I would also try to do a very like a poor man's Nate Silver or something, poor man's statistical breakdown and go, well, yeah, but don't most people probably spend most of their time within 4 miles of their
right.
home? Therefore, right. the like I was trying to break down that statistic as I was debating whether or not to put my seatbelt on.
Right. Meanwhile, yeah. you're driving with your knee and no seatbelt because you're counting out numbers on your hand.
Yeah, right. He went through the windshield. Was he texting? No, he had an abacus. He was trying to figure out. He was trying to break down something he'd heard at Ingram High School driver's ed class circa 1992. Anyway, Carlton, anyway, excuse me, Alfonso Ribeiro is the current host of America's Funniest Videos, but he also, of course, famously did the Carlton dance on The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. And there you can buy on Fortnite, you can buy these you know, in-game purchases where you can get your avatar, your character, to do different dances. And one of them is – it's not called the Carlton. It's called something else, but it's very clearly the same movement as the Carlton. So he sued them. This kid called Backpack Kid – who invented the floss dance. Did you know that was like – everything had to be invented by someone, but I didn't expect it to be a slightly awkward white kid.
I didn't know that – I mean, because some dances are associated with specific people or a specific song that maybe somebody created the song to introduce the dance. But I assume that the floss was just more of a naturally occurring kind of dance move that – I don't know – popped up somehow. I didn't know that it was associated with anybody.
Yeah. It's this kid whose real name, of course, I don't have right in front of me. Oh, his name's Russell Horning. And I watched this video that I don't know if this is the original video where he flosses. I think it might be. It's really quite something because he's I say this, you know, As a person who hasn't invented any viral dances that have swept the nation, and as a person who can't floss, as the Diamond Vision at Safeco Field will attest, the kid's a pretty bad dancer.
Mm.
Like, the video that I think maybe the floss dance started in, is he's in his room. He's like, it's just one of those kind of, there are literally millions of these videos on the internet now of just kids turning on a camera that's on their computer and filming themselves doing something and then putting it on YouTube or whatever. He's doing these dance moves that are pretty awkward and herky jerky, and then he starts flossing, but like a very it's like The Simpsons season 3. It's like their heads are still kind of shaky, like Bart Simpson's like spikes are kind of perpetually wavy. That's how I usually know I want to go to another episode.
Mm-hmm.
It's very like, it's just kind of early floss. Anyway, that's Backpack Kid, Russell Horning, who invented it, I guess.
Yeah, let me give a little bit of background because I looked it up while you were talking.
Yeah,
he was an Instagram star who had various dance moves that he would post to Instagram, and then
it
kind of blew up.
But was he popular for being, was the joke on him?
Not that I'm necessarily reading. It says, 16-year-old American school kid. This is an article from a while back explaining to people like you and me about this new dance craze and where it came from. 16-year-old American school kid, Russell Horning. He's a dancing social media megastar, better known as the Backpack Kid. Instagram star, known for his flowing dance moves and blank expression. So this one blew up, and then he appeared with Katy Perry. Katy Perry asked him to join her on stage for one of her Saturday Night Live performances, and he did the floss there.
Oh, and maybe
there.
He flossed there.
Yeah.
Now, I'm sure somebody who's much more plugged into youth culture will will clarify this, but I have to say, the video I watched where he's flossing, it's like, the flossing is an interesting dance move that he created or whatever, but the rest of the dancing's pretty bad, and I'm unclear on if he was an Instagram star because his dancing was a little weird. Like, it was kind of a little herky-jerky, and he was expressionless. Like, I'm wondering if the joke started out on him, and then flossing was just kind of funny, and people liked it, and the Katy Perry thing put it into the stratosphere, and now it's a thing. I guess that's neither here nor there. I will tell you this. When I heard that Alfonso Ribeiro was suing them for this dance, the Carlton that he invented, my first thought was, and I don't even like that I had this thought. I was like, isn't that the property of the writers and creators of The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air? Because it's a thing a character did on The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. And I had some what I consider to be confirmation on that, which was this is from New York Magazine, by the way. Bill Lawrence, who created the movie, the TV show Scrubs, he confirmed that Fortnite had reached out to him about using this dance that Donald Faison's character does on Scrubs it's called the Poison Dance. They wanted to use it in the game. I don't know if they ended up using it or not, but Bill Lawrence is the creator of Scrubs. So if a character on Scrubs did a thing, I think legally, because they're getting paid to be on there and they've signed a bunch of stuff, it's kind of like it's the property of the people who created the show. And I would imagine, I don't really understand how Carlton is going to get paid for doing a dance that happened while he was on a show, being a character on the show.
Yeah, I mean, legally speaking, if you can claim copyright ownership over a dance, I would agree with you that even this adds an extra level of complexity to it, because I was just talking with somebody the other day who had to like kind of be careful about what they said in a meeting, because they realized they have an idea that they're working on, and if they say it in a work meeting, could that be considered the property of the company?
That happened to the guy who invented Bratz dolls.
Oh, really?
He worked at Barbie, and while he was working at Barbie, he started to create these dolls, these Bratz dolls on the side, and they are like so popular that they've actually challenged Barbie's market dominance, and then the Mattel or whoever it is, Hasbro, I don't know, they have sued him, saying that basically they should get like the money from Bratz because he invented it while he was working at Barbie. And he's like, I was writing it on a different computer. That kind of stuff is real.
Yeah, and then when you get into the creative stuff, especially like, yeah, you have a writer's room and then you have people who perform. I guess it's a little bit different if it's a physical comedy thing. Like, you have Chris Farley, like, yeah, the things that he did on camera, you know, with his physicality, had nothing to do with what was going on in the writer's room necessarily. That's something unique that he brought to the show. So I don't know how all that breaks down, but to go to the broader conversation here, if you don't mind me kind of jumping into this, is so Fortnite, and I don't even, you know, Genevieve the other day just turned to me and she said, Do you know anything about Fortnite dancing? Because I just kind of keep seeing it, and I don't know what's going on. She's like, some things online are just so obvious to youth culture that you can't even get a straight answer on it. You know? Like, and I was like, yeah. It's like, it's so obvious, I don't even know
they
how to look it up
technology
anymore.
On us.
Yeah, but I did download Fortnite a while back, if you recall. I ended up getting rid of it because it was just like, I don't like first person shooter games, apparently. It was just too frenetic, and it was a fighting game. But I did appreciate the concept of it, and I understand why it's wildly popular. In fact, I wish I was better at it. Frankly, I just didn't have the patience to learn the dexterity of it. But and it was a resource hog, man. It was just taking up all the space on my computer, surprisingly. But one of the things your character can do, obviously, is dance. You can just, like, you know, hit a set of keys and break into a dance, but then you can buy special dances. So you have one basic dance that your character can do when you just play the game for free, but if you want to shell out $8, then you can get a dance. And the one that is based on Carlton's dance is called the Fresh Dance. So it's clearly inspired by by it. They're not even really trying to hide the fact that it's inspired by Carlton. There is one called Chicken in Fortnite. I don't know if you've seen these side-by-side comparisons, Luke. This is a great piece, actually, in Business Insider. This is what Business Insider does best. They put GIFs of the original dances next to the Fortnite dances. Have you seen this?
I used to be a big Business Outsider reader.
Yeah, I know. You're a Business Outsider artist.
I'm not getting – you know what? There's somebody closer to the source here that's doing this. Oh, Business Insider.
Insider, right. Yeah. Well, you're a business outside-the-box thinker. Anyway, so clearly these are homages, right? The chicken dance and the rest of development is called Chicken. There are some in here that I'm not familiar with. There's one called Confused, which is based on John Travolta being confused before he picks up what's her name for the date, Marcellus Wallace's wife for the date, and he just kind of looks around confused. Like,
Mia Wallace in
in
Pulp Fiction.
Let's see. In The Floss is called The Floss in Fortnite and in real life. There's one from Dumb and Dumber. It's called Hootenanny in Fortnite. So it goes on and on and on. And then the question is, the Gangnam Style is called Ride the Pony in Fortnite. So people have come up with dances. But I truly believe that a dance is something that, yeah, if you create a dance and then it catches on, that is the whole point of dancing. Like, you don't own a dance and you don't make money off a dance. But what I find fascinating about this and where I'm trying to challenge myself is that was the way music used to be in a certain way, right? And, like, music is free, man. It started with cavemen's banging rocks together or whatever. It was an oral tradition. It was a way of telling stories and passing things down from generation to generation. You can't own a song. But clearly, as the music industry was built up, we know that you can own songs and you can own the rights to chord progressions, and we've talked about that so much on the show, and what is the line between inspiration and straight up ripping somebody off. But as far as I know, we've never known people to make money off of dances necessarily. We've known, like I said, like hip-hop groups or rock and roll songs from the 50s do the whatever, from the Electric Slide, that's not from the 50s, but you know, we hear about musicians who create dances. The Twist. That's the exact example I'm thinking of. But I just don't feel like if you see somebody, like, there was never a way to sell just the dance. There was a way to sell the song or the rights to perform the song. But was anybody ever getting sued doing the Twist? And it's just really hard for me to get my head around the fact that somebody who comes up with a dance owns the right to that dance. But maybe we're seeing for the first time another huge company making money, $8 a pop, by selling a dance.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like my gut says somebody should be getting paid over this. Like, I think if the Backpack Kid really invented it. Yeah, I think the Backpack Kid, if he invented it. Well, again, if the Backpack Kid wrote a song or wrote a poem and then Fortnite sold that exact poem or song for $8 a pop, it would be a no-brainer, right?
Yeah.
So I'm kind of going along with what you've said. And now, for me, it's a little bit more questionable for somebody like Alfonso Ribeira or a person who's like the actual actor who's doing something where they're being paid to be part of. I think it's probably more the creators of the show who would be owed the money. I'm sure that that's also just legally defined somewhere in the contracts. But I don't know. I mean, look, yeah, I don't want the backpack kid showing up at my house and telling me I got to pay them money if I want to floss in my own living room. But I don't have any love for the Fortnite creators that, like, they should be able to make money off of something that was someone else's creative control. This is an actual this is tape from the backpack boy.
Motion so that you wouldn't think that we were encouraging destruction with this idea. From the oldest of times, people danced for a number of reasons. They danced in prayer, or so that their crops would be plentiful.
I don't know why he got into the crops and stuff, but, you know, that's Backpack Kid for you.
Yeah.
Let's see here. Millie Rock. The last thing I want to say is that I spent a lot of time this morning trying to figure out what the hell the Millie Rock is.
Oh, which yeah. I saw it in your show sheet. I don't know what that is either.
This dance that this is a rapper named 2 Millie. Again, this is just... as if I haven't confirmed how out of touch I am with everything. It's really weird. I went down this whole Tekashi 9 rabbit hole the other day. Have you fucked with that?
No.
Sorry to use a swear. Have you bleeped with Tekashi 9 at all?
No. What is it?
He's this rapper from New York. He's in jail right now, actually. He's going to probably do a lot of time, but he's this... just part of this... I don't even know what version of hip-hop you would describe it as, but... but there's a real big resurgence in hip hop videos of just being like 30 or 50 guys just sitting around on like a playground or like a stoop. And then like the guy who's the kind of titular head of the operation out there, like just yelling into the camera. But like there's just not a lot going on in the video. And like I just noticed that one of the like Tekashi 9, he's got like four different names, but. Anyway, that dude has got a video like that. And then this guy, 2 Millie, has a video where they're hanging out somewhere. And he apparently has this dance, the Millie Rock, which I couldn't really figure out what he was doing in the video. He's just moving to the music in a way that is like you've seen grandparents do it at a bar mitzvah. And then I went on some other – I had to like find another like hip-hop like video podcast he was on where at the end they talked him into doing – the Millie Rock, which looked like you just move side to side and do them like you move side to side to the rhythm. And then they like I don't really understand how the Millie Rock is different than just swaying rhythmically to music. But there must be something I don't understand about it. But apparently there's one of the dances you can buy on Fortnite is clearly a ripoff of the Millie Rock and 2 Millie wants his money.
Yeah, I'm not saying that I won't change my mind on this down the road if we have more conversations as this storyline develops, as I get more context. But right now, God, I'm in one of those places where I feel like I have so many thoughts about this, but they're unorganized. And I don't know how much of this I'm going to kind of want to take back. But with music, obviously, we value the fact that we want people with great talent and great vision to be able to dedicate their life to that talent and vision and reward them so that they can make a living off of it. In other words, it's probably better, and I support a world where somebody who has a lot of artistic talent, whether it's music or painting or what have you, can do that for their living, that they don't have to just squeeze it. They don't have to just squeeze that art out after they do, you know, a 12-hour
like
shift at the
milk.
Plant. Right, exactly. I like to drink art milk. Just squeeze the milk out of the art. And so that's why the, you know, in a certain way, you could make an argument about, boy, the music industry really ruined music. The idea of music originally, as I blabbed about before, was like it was a way of communicating. It wasn't a way of making money. It was just you can't own a song. It's oral tradition. Well, obviously, times changed and we did monetize music. And the reason why we did it, even though I think the music industry itself have been you know, preying on artists for a long time. I think it's a bad industry. For the most part, you support the idea of it because you want, you know, your favorite band to be able to continue making more albums and touring and do all the things that you enjoy their art for. So I understand all of that, yet I feel like, are we on the, unless there's some precedent that I'm not thinking of or don't know about, are we on the verge of, instead of having a music industry, having a dance industry? Now, for the first time, are we monetizing the idea of these were people expressing joy in at a dance party or something, and they came up with this little thing, a way of moving your feet. Oh, I'm doing it a little bit differently. Now my friends are doing it, and we all do this thing, and it's kind of evolved, and now we have a name for it, and it's called the turtle squirrel. That's a dance I'm working on. I'll tell you about that later. But
oh, yeah. I'd trademark that right now. Right.
And now, you know, everybody's doing the turtle squirrel. And then I see the turtle squirrel on America's Stars Got Dancing. Should I be like, oh, I'm going to sue that show? Or then they start selling it in a video game. To me, that doesn't seem... I don't want that world. I want the world where it's kind of like, yeah, we created this thing and it evolved and now people are doing dances around the country and then different things will get hot and it's purely something that you're doing just as an expression of kind of joy and I guess reaction to music.
Yeah, but what I think is that there is a world where that can coexist peacefully, which is people can do the turtle squirrel on TV. And that's fine. But now if America's Dance Got Talent wants to sell you, I don't even know how this would work technologically, but if they were somehow selling you a plug-in or a thing you could put on your character as you watch the TV show that was the turtle squirrel, now you should be getting some money for that. Like, in other words, I don't think that anyone is saying you shouldn't be able to dance on television or dance on, you know, in a video or whatever and do a dance. No one's going to sue you for doing the Cupid Shuffle. But if somebody is selling you the ability for your character to do something that is the Cupid Shuffle, then you should somebody should get paid for that. Because if it were any other art form, I think it would be a no-brainer that we would say you should get paid for it.
Yeah, I guess that's why I say, like, I'm not saying I couldn't change on this, because, like, going back to this list of Fortnite dances, like, some are very specific, like, dances that somebody came up with to create a new dance, like, you know, Gangnam Style. Like, that's a very specific one.
Orange Justice.
But then there's another one that is like, you know, the celebratory dance that they do in one quick episode of Seinfeld, right? It's basically Elaine just dancing and celebrating with her arms up and just kind of jogging her feet. And, like, that's just a quick moment in a sitcom. Should that be copyrighted too?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's I don't know. It's a good question. Let's take this to and then we should move on. But let's just take this to yet an additional level. I was trying to see if I could get a side by side of the Millie Rock and whatever the dance is on Fortnite so I can fully understand what the Millie Rock is. And then where do I end up, Andrew? I end up on some YouTube page, Mojo something or other, that has 6 million views. And what is the video? The video is side-by-siding the dances on Fortnite with the real dance, like wherever the real dance originally occurred.
Mm-hmm.
Which so is you like can the, see the side-by-side.
That's what I had here in GIF form. That's
which
what
is
I was
Mojo
saying.
TV. Mojo TV is making money off of showing both of these things.
Right.
And we're making a very small amount of money off of talking about, you know, like, it's funny to me that, like, I don't know. It's just – it's like Mojo TV is getting 6 million views of people watching these side-by-side dances and, in effect, making money. Now, I guess you could say it's a news story, so there's obviously fair use there. But I don't know. It's just funny. It's like there's so many layers to different entities getting some sort of financial, you know, financial end of this thing.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, same with the Business Insider or Business Outsider piece I'm reading. But yeah, I don't know. I find this, I said earlier in the show that I was just going to have a really hot take on it. It just seems really dumb to me. I'm still, I shouldn't say dumb. It just seems like it's not a direction I think we should go, which is copywriting dances. But I'm definitely open to, I don't know, man. I'm open to more context on this one. I do think it's fascinating, though.
Chance the Rapper says, Fortnite should put the actual rap songs behind the dances that make so much money as emotes. Black creatives created and popularized these dances but never monetized them. Imagine the money people are spending on these emotes being shared with the artists that made them. It seems like a reasonable a reasonable position. All right, should we do a couple emails before we get out of here?
Let me see what we got in the tank here. Nope, we don't have anything in the tank. So let's skip emails.
Well, this is
today.
A great time to remind people, help us fill the tank with thoughtful, witty emails and observations and I don't know, just feedback for us, as long as it's positive. That's all we ask.
Yeah, just don't have any criticism. Don't correct us on anything. Make sure it's really funny, to the point, 500 words or less. Yeah. Why
or
is that so
hard?
Or
either 500 words or less, or make it 20,000 words and recorded, and then we'll just play it as an episode of the show.
Yeah, that is
good
true.
Enough. We will take the day off, and we'll just play you discussing, I don't know, the Carlton or something else, telling a hilarious story of something that happened. Hey, speaking of hilarious stories of something that happened, this is what I'll do in this little section of the program. Remind people that we are putting together a Valentine's radio special that will play on public radio stations all over the country on, we consider it's really Valentine's month, February. And so we would like you to call the TBTL voicemail line, which is 206-414-TBTL, 206-414-8285, and leave us a message. Tell us a story about love, about first love, about unrequited love, about requited love, just anything at any part of the journey of love. We'd be curious to hear your stories, your thoughts, your observations. I'm almost slipping into Bruce Williams now, which is dangerous.
We'll was he the AM radio guy?
Your dreams.
He was.
Let's see if I can find this. Do I have the jackpot one? No, I don't. Dreams. Oh, this will get there. And this is now, of course, way more involved than it needed to be. This is the guy that I am talking about, Bruce Williams from TalkNet.
We talk about you and your life, your hopes, your ambitions, your dreams, all of the things that make you the very, very special person that you are.
If I ever have the impact on Americans that Bruce Williams had on me doing TalkNet, I will have achieved my life goal for career. Anyway, call the voicemail line 206-414-TBTL and leave us a message. And email us just for use on regular old TBTL, andrew@tbtl.net, luke@tbtl.net. Thoughts on a show title?
I didn't have anything. I
wrote
down
Forks. Didn't you say – you said a funny thing. What about – what is it? Forks over Fork Night?
Forks over – I don't steal my turtle squirrel was one thing I wrote down, which is, I don't know if we actually said that.
Teach me how to turtle squirrel?
How about that? How about teach me how to turtle squirrel? I like that.
Teach me it. Do we have to pay Swag District? Cali Swag District or whatever? I don't, what's the name
you
of those guys?
You have to pay me.
Teach me how to Dougie?
I need to now. Okay. Now I'm all into this. I'm kind of like, I'm making this argument.
Yeah, right.
Oh, you know, you shouldn't have to, you just shouldn't sue. Now I'm like, can I make money off the turtle squirrel? And maybe I should just spend this afternoon like really perfecting the turtle squirrel.
Oh my God, Andrew, that would break the internet. At least that would break the newsletter.
God, yes.
If we get you turtle squirreling at Walsh Walsh and Doormat and it's the newsletter video, I would really like to see that.
Maybe some – well, we've asked a lot of our listeners in the past 2 minutes, but maybe somebody should come up with a turtle squirrel and submit your turtle squirrel. We can choose the best turtle squirrel. I don't know how that would work, and it sounds like a lot of work for me, so never mind. Teach me how to turtle squirrel, and then why don't you pick a Christmas song? I'll play it from here, but, we only have, today, tomorrow, and Friday, and then we have our taped shows, which are, again, all new shows the next 2 weeks with Genevieve, Camaro, Kev swings by. We have a lot of good stuff, but you only have 3 more days to pick Christmas music, and I know that's something close to your heart. So I'm going to hand it to
I've
you.
I've got one here. Actually, can I play one from here?
Sure.
Just because I've got it on my computer. It's from our friend Rob Benson, who the listeners may know from – he was in Nevada Bachelors, The Glass Notes. He's just been in a whole bunch of different bands. He plays solo music. He's helped out with a million TBTL events. He's just the best. I ran into him and Darla at the Wedgwood Broiler a while ago, and it was just like, it was everything I love in the world all happening in the same place. And he just emailed me this the other day. He said he put together a little arrangement of the Christmas song, you know, the chestnuts roasting on an open fire song.
Oh, yeah.
He just recorded this in his basement the other day, and I kind of dig it. It's a cool take on it. So we'll go out with Rob Benson.
Great.
Our friend Rob Benson. And if you want to, I don't know what his website is these days, but it's R-O-B-B Benson. Go find whatever he's doing and buy it and go see him, because he's just like really awesome. So we'll do that. And before we do that, we will say to all of you, thanks for listening. Thanks for being a part of TBTL. We'll be back here tomorrow with more Imaginary Radio for you. Until then, please remember, no mountain too tall.
And good luck to all.
Chestnuts roasting on an open fire.